Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
It is Friday morning, and we continue our regular feature, Ideas Matter, checking in with the public humanities that we do each Friday at this time. Today, we'll be thinking about how to engage the public with the humanities in this young century by taking a bird's eye view of the state of the public humanities by talking with Sarah Auger and Michael Frisch on the history of the field, its current state, and new initiatives to engage the broader public with the humanities. Our guests are Sarah Auger, the Executive Director of the New York Council for the Humanities. Sarah, thank you very much for being with us. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Joe.
And Mike Frisch is with us as well, Professor of History and American Studies at SUNY Buffalo. Mike, how are you? Very nice to have you with us. Good morning. Sarah, let us begin with you. Talk a little bit about, I guess just we'll start with the definition of public humanities and really how this has morphed and how we are looking at it now.
Yes, of course. So the New York Council for the Humanities has been in a field called public humanities since 1975. And our founding followed that of the National Endowment for the Humanities in 1965. So the idea has been around about how the humanities can serve the public good or the common good for all of these years. And I'm pleased to report that there has been a lot of progress made. And what are the public humanities? You may be used to them in a classroom setting. What we're talking about are the humanities for people where they live and work in an out-of-school setting, and also humanities opportunities where they may be lacking in a school setting. What we really don't try to do is improve college humanities and university humanities. We think they're doing well, and in fact, those are our friends. And some of the idea of the public humanities has been how to harness the research and the insights of the humanities, what scholars are doing, and bring that to a general public. And there are a lot of ways to do that. There might be publishing for public audiences. What we're really talking about and what we've innovated has been in public programming, so how the humanities can be of use in the hands of audiences and in the hands of people where they live and work. And Mike has a lot of experience with this, both in his field and in public programming itself, right?
Well, thanks. I would say building on what Sarah said, that the real direction in the last few years from where we started, both at the Council and I think in general, is to think of public humanities as much more of a conversation and a dialogue. It used to be that it often was a kind of dissemination or trickle-down approach. Scholars knew things, and they would do their work and teach in universities, but then they would broadcast them out to the public where they would filter down and be used in various ways. And we still do, of course, a great deal of that kind of sharing. But in the humanities, given that there are human beings on both sides, we're often dealing with issues about families and work and community and things that people know about. It's not simply a one-way street of some expert telling what they know about. The opportunity is to really encourage a conversation between expertise and experience. They both, I always like to point out, are the same word, EXPE, right at that front indicates two different ways of becoming an expert. And so public humanities allows what people know and what they bring to come into dialogue with great works of literature, with historical studies, with philosophy, with all the things that scholars bring. And when you find a good format for that, it's a pretty electric and productive conversation.
When you talk about that conversation, that's a conversation that will always go on, but it does change over time, doesn't it?
It does. I'm glad you mentioned that, because there isn't a static body of knowledge that called the humanities. The humanities themselves, the fields of study of history and literature and social sciences, are continually changing to be able to study the world around us. And at the same time that those fields are changing, audiences are changing too, from demographics, who's actually in our communities, to what they expect in a good program and something that would engage them. So I would venture that audiences, public audiences, say, of a library or a museum or theatergoers, have always responded well to interactive formats and multimedia. And now not only do they interact with that very well, but they also increasingly expect it, and expect it at different age levels. So you would imagine that maybe the youngest audiences would be pretty used to multimedia, but it doesn't stop there. There are a lot of out-of-school adults who expect it and are used to things like being able to stream TED Talks at will and have a brief interaction with something that's of great interest. So these are all formats and expectations that we work with as well as we have a changing sort of research or academic or teaching background as well.
We have this program that used to be called Speakers in the Humanities, which was a terrific and is a, you know, a terrific idea. We've been doing it for a long time, but it pretty much comes out of that earlier notion. Find an expert, give them a chance to go before public audiences, give a perhaps a library that doesn't have a huge budget or a community center or some other institution a chance to have a speaker with the help of the council who can give a really exciting program that people will enjoy. Well, that's always going to be valuable. But I think this sense that we now have the opportunity for much more interesting conversations as the issues change and as community needs change and people bring more to this encounter in terms of what they expect, that we've really refashioned the program into what we're calling the Public Scholar Program, which is based on the idea not simply of finding a speaker who will broadcast out in a community setting, but somebody who really wants to work with communities to shape the kind of conversation that will be the most interesting and useful and bring their expertise into play, and to talk with each other about how they're doing it. It's kind of an evolving art. Just because you're a professor doesn't mean you know how to really work productively with a community group or a group of younger people, even outside of a classroom with your expertise on the name of the course. So it's an evolving art, and we think that by giving people a chance to work intensely on their preparations, to work with communities, and to talk with each other about new ways of doing this, new ways of using media, new ways of empowering conversation with the people who show up for programs, and what to do with it after, well, that's a pretty exciting zone right now, and we're pretty pumped up about how the new program will shift that orientation from simply setting up an expert to send out what they already know and really have everybody involved in a pretty exciting exploration of the best kind of conversations they can have.
Sarah, I mentioned in the introduction that we'd be taking a bird's eye view of the state of the public humanities. So with that in mind, give us an idea, and much of what Mike was just talking about, of the projects that you see emerging around the country, the university projects, the NEH, the state humanities councils, and how they are transforming the public humanities.
Yes. Well, I think we're in a very good spot with the National Endowment for the Humanities. I know that you had the chairman of the NEH, Bro Adams, speak
yes.
on your program.
Yep.
And he's launching something called the Common Good. And it has a number of very interesting questions and frameworks in which we can look at how the humanities can be of service and how we can be useful. And the state councils have been moving in that space for quite some time as well. So our Public Scholars program takes a little bit of its cue from another program that we're running with humanities graduate students. They're called our Public Humanities Fellows, and they happen to be enrolled at New York State's institutions of higher learning, of graduate degree granting institutions, Cornell, NYU, Columbia, CUNY, SUNY Buffalo, where Mike is from. And so we've learned so much from the fellows already. They're very interested in something called the digital humanities, which are different platforms and abilities to use big chunks of data to tell interesting stories or put them on interesting digital platforms, interactive platforms, and archival tools. So they're able to combine a number of things with great facility, and it's very interesting for us to look at. We learn something from each of these projects. not like, oh, we know everything and we're going to give you this fellowship because that's how nice we are. No, we actually really want to know what they're working on and what the tools are. So one of the things that we noticed with them is that if they could be a cohort together in a group, that part of the value of the entire experience is their ability to network with each other. And Mike referred to that with the new Public Scholars Program as well. So we thought, you know, what if we could use some of the successes of these other types of programs here and around the nation to inform what we do with our traditional speakers bureau, and this is how we came to the idea of the Public Scholars. And I have to say that we're hearing a lot of interest in the program, and we have a call open right now, and we do want to encourage people to look at it and decide if they'd like to apply. So that's open until March 25th, applications being accepted.
I think in this kind of work, it also gives scholars and graduate students and communities a chance to respond to issues that are very alive in their community. So one example, and NEH and the Council of New York have been responding to this, is to develop programming around veterans issues, not simply a kind of, you know, feel good, veterans are important, let's, you know, honor them, which of course most of us really want to do a great deal, but there are enormous complex dimensions of the veterans experience that are grounded, particularly when people come home and carry a lot of that with them, and how do they work through that, and how do communities help work through that, how do we really honor people by listening to their stories closely and discussing what's really important, how do their issues relate to other issues. I've had a couple of students, one who's been in the program that Sarah mentioned and another, I think, who's applying now, who are doing very complex research projects on veterans' issues and memory and how they deal with the very, very tough experiences they've been through, and trying to say, how can we bring some of that into really engaged discussion that with veterans and with the putting them in discussion with each other and with the communities they live and work in, and really have everybody come through that with a deeper understanding of what some of the problems are, what some of the policy issues are, and what some of the human issues are.
So it seems from both of you that, I mean, obviously funding is always an issue, right? But overall, things are pretty good.
That's right. Things are at a good point. Just add water. Just add resources.
That silence shows a lot.
Thank you.
Well, to find out more about the humanities, the New York humanities, you can go to nyhumanities.org or wamc.org/roundtable, and we have links that you can click there, wamc.org/roundtable. Sarah and Mike, I thank you so much for being with us. It's always a great pleasure. I wish you all of the best. Have a wonderful holiday weekend, and also thank you for all the great work you're doing in our communities. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.